Kia ora and welcome to the Machinist Therapy Hotline. Yet again, we've had an unfathomable break for no reason other than me, probably. But anyhow, we managed to get everyone back together. And we have a big announcement to do on this podcast. So before we do that, let's just check. We have the dream team. Sean Klauser.
Let's go, Warriors.
Shane Paul.
Yo, yo.
And me, Jody Tuckwell. This is the Machinist Therapy Hotline, but we have a brand new host joining us for as long as we can handle. Danny Rudolph!
Hello.
Go, Danny.
How's it going?
Yeah. Go, Danny. Woo-hoo. Go, Danny. So, Danny, are we gonna call you Albert 2.0, or do you prefer Danny Reindeer, or the Dan Man, or Dantron, or Mega Penis?
Whatever you'd like.
But,
small parts handler.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of a funny story right there. Is like, I put Danny as my Instagram name, but I kind of hate when people call me that.
Would you like to be called
Dan?
Seems like self-sabotage.
Yeah.
Are you just punishing yourself by putting Danny?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, okay. That was the thought. Yeah.
You know what, Danny? You could probably have one of your kids show you how to change that from Danny to Dan.
Yeah, I couldn't get Dan, though. That was a problem.
What, somebody already had it?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, someone's already got Dan Rudolph. What about Dan the Rudolph?
I didn't try that one.
Hey, that's why we're here.
Rudolph.
We literally just saved you. Okay, Dan E, why don't you introduce yourself to everybody? We know you're actually a bit of a podcast whore and you've been on a few.
Yeah, no doubt.
So we figured that, you know, what we're actually doing is we're saving you from all the other podcasts by getting you on ours so that then this can be yours as well, you see?
Yeah, every 3 months we'll, you know, get together and do this.
So please introduce yourself quarterly. And let all the listeners know who you are and what you're about.
Yeah, so I'm primarily a Swiss machinist. So I've been doing that for probably about 12 years now or so. I have a small shop with my father and my wife, and we make parts for the medical industry. So we do a lot of stainless and titanium, and I have 10 citizens, almost 11 next week. And then I have two robo-drills. So just pretty simple, streamlined, but a lot of different variety of parts.
That's pretty awesome. I remember I've been following you for quite a while. I think it was way back before you got your forklift stuck in the mud. But I remember commenting one time because you took a picture of, I didn't know who it was at the time, and it was your dad, and he was out doing something, busting ass, and he had a shirt on. I'm like, okay, fine. And then the next day you took another picture of the same guy and he was wearing the same shirt. I'm like, I couldn't see that there was anything on the shirt, but I could see enough that I said, I asked you, I said, does that guy ever fucking change his clothes? You know, that's my dad. And those are our t-shirts. I'm like, oh shit. You guys have a company and you're wearing company t-shirts and I'm talking shit about your dad. I was like, that's when I decided just to quit talking, period.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know.
Pretty much running Swiss machines. I just wear the same thing every day, black shirt, so you can't see the oil stains on it.
Why not? Exactly.
Yeah, awesome. I learned the hard way. It doesn't wash out.
No.
Yeah, when you're running Hankshofer's oil, you have to have your own laundry basket. That's a fact.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When we first got ours, I showed up in a, we had just gotten at the Christmas party, like brand new company shirts. They gave everyone like four of them or something. I had this nice, like kind of heather gray one, and I wore it, and then it was stained forever after that. I only got to wear it once.
Yeah, those.
What do you mean?
You were setting up the L20, and they're the worst for that.
Yeah.
What'd you do with it, Boomer? I mean, you wore it once, and then
oh no. Well, I meant it was only like, you know, respectable looking ones. I still wore it, of course.
Oh, okay. Because you keep washing it, eventually it fades out after about 3 or 4 years. It'll come back to normal.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's the way my shirts are.
I'll hang it out in the sun. Maybe it'll bleach out or something.
It just cooks it out.
Yeah.
So
now, the worst are one of the operators, he always wears gloves. So then the oil gets on everything.
Oh yeah.
And it's like it's all over the control, and you touch anything over by the machine, it's just covered in oil. And it's like, dude, just have a rag and keep your hands clean, and
exactly.
Don't just gorilla grip the part, like, you know, just grab it and put it in the Ozonic 203 and clean it all off.
You're running Ozonic? Nice.
Yeah, we have a little wash station. This old timer showed me the trick to have kind of like a 3-part rinse.
I didn't know you ever had Ozonic. I mean, I've been using it forever. And when I remember first going to IMTS and then saying, going to the Hangstifer's booth, and they're like, well, what do you cut your oil with? And I said, freaking Safety Clean, which we hate. And they're like, well, this will work. I'm like, it'll get oil out of a vine hole. I go, guarantee it. What's your address? And they sent me a free gallon. And we tried it. We've been buying it by the drum ever since.
I know. I told you, some old timer showed me that you.
Oh, I'm the fucking old timer. I see how you are, Boomsticks. Motherfucker. I love you, man. Before we go off on a tangent here, you know, I don't remember the last time that we actually recorded, but I took that trip over to Nevada and then came back. And then, well, Boomer guilt tripped me. He's like, you drove right by me, bitch. And you didn't even say hi. I said, well, trust me, I'm on my way back. Where are you at? Give me your digits. Give me your fucking address. And I swooped in and saw him. And I know Shane can't post a lot of the shit that he builds, but to be able to walk into that shop and see the stuff that he makes and that they make and the detail and the complicated parts, and they need a security guard, but I can't disclose why. I was impressed, Shane. That's a fucking beautiful place. You guys do great work. And man, I was really impressed. I mean, everybody gives you a hard time about Megzak's cool, and everybody gives you a hard time about having a beautiful shop, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it was, unless you walk in there and see it, you don't know what's really going on. It was very impressive. Nice job.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's quite a compliment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I started with that company, we were a 4,500 square foot little warehouse with 4 turning centers. And then we've grown into what we are now. So we got, we're up to 7 Integrexes now.
Yeah, that's some serious shit.
Yeah. Some of that shit's pretty cool, man, but it's fucking stressful.
Well, I mean, and then Jody, your fucking shop's looking good too, man. I'm not sure what else you're bringing in next. All I ever see is more buildings, more machines digging up dirt, more concrete. You're obviously growing. Danny's fucking somehow putting Vaseline on all the rest of the screw machines and slipping more in there. I don't know how many more I could fit in the garage. It's insane, but it looks good, man. It really does.
Thanks, man. His garage is like, you know, is basically a straight man's bum hole, and he's Joe Exotic, you know, and he's just stretching it and slipping them in.
Something like that. I bet you never have to turn the heater on in that shop, do you?
No, not at all.
So where are you actually located, Danny? Dan E?
So we are basically, if you have a map of Pennsylvania, we're right between Lancaster and Reading. So kind of two larger cities in the southeast of Pennsylvania. So we're Amish country, if you've ever heard of that. We're in Amish country, Pennsylvania.
And whereabouts geographically is Pennsylvania?
It is on the East Coast, right? Sort of middle of the East Coast.
Hence why it's 11 o'clock there. And not 8 o'clock. Yeah, right. Okay. Time differences.
How far are you away from the Yates?
They're in Pittsburgh. So about probably 5 hours drive on the turnpike.
Well, they're still in Pennsylvania though, right?
Yeah. Or no? Yeah, but basically the complete other side.
I was going to say it has to be. I mean, it sounds like California talk when you say I drove 11 hours in California and I'm still in California. But how far are you away from Tom, the machinist, who I know goes to your place and goes through your drawers because I've seen video footage of him doing that.
Whoa.
I think he's a couple, 2 hours away. I don't know.
Is he in Pennsylvania?
Always comes over. I never go to his shop. So, no, he's in Jersey.
Does Does he bring cheese Jersey. And wine?
No.
Did he just only talk French to you when he came to your shop and it was confusing?
I think it was English, but it was hard to tell.
I love that dude. There was one time he sent me a message or did something, and his face was in it. And I screenshot that. It's like, oh my God, he's off. Oh my God, you screenshot that? Well, here's one so you don't have to. And he sent me a fucking cheesecake pose. I'm like, wow. That's
it. He's a funny dude. What's going
on. He is a way funny dude.
So, and Danny, so I mean, Pennsylvania, that's
where pumpkin pie comes from. God damn it.
Is it?
Yeah. Pennsylvania.
I was going to say, well, like, give me five things that are interesting about Pennsylvania, like from a person that's never been there.
You got Philadelphia, you got Liberty Bell. You got Amish country, like I said. Civil War battlefields are kind of a thing. We got Gettysburg.
Oh, do you do that? Do you do those Civil War reenactments? Do you get dressed up like a soldier and play dead?
No, I don't. But my dad took us on a summer vacation of all the Civil War battlefields in the area, and that pretty much killed my Civil War history.
Is that where they light bombs and blow vices up into the sky and let them fall down? I've seen that in the movie once.
So the core work that you do, it's all sort of medical stuff, is it? Is it?
Yeah. Everything we do, almost everything we do is medical. So they're in the area we're at, there's a lot of basically contract manufacturing for medical, or actually even OEMs in the area, sort of that between where we're at in Philadelphia, there's a lot of medical manufacturing. So we kind of fit into that niche there.
And so does that require some sort of like regulations or regulatory oversee to enable you to be a supplier, or?
Most of our customers just require ISO 9001. And then sort of that next tier up, you would be like FDA or ISO 1345, which is sort of the medical version of ISO. And then that sort of goes hand in hand with being FDA registered. So we're sort of like, I guess you'd say like a tier three, basically, where we can supply to a contract manufacturer, an OEM, but we're not delivering stuff that's implantable or clean room or sterile. So we're just doing stuff that our customer will assemble, and then they can do the sterilization or clean room type activities to it.
So that's a good spot to be in, even like in semiconductor, when you can be on the second or third tier and not have to have all that qualification, but yet the people that are giving you parts know you make quality parts, so you're making them, and they all the spec randomly, but then you go dock to stock and like, hey, it's coming from him, just put them together and go. I mean, that's kind of how my business is. And because I mean, I'm still just ISO compliant. I ain't certified in shit. And it's like Hank calibrates off of micrometers, so whatever. But it's if you got a good core that you know you're building parts for, like you yourself, then it's huge. And you know, I mean, you can go to the other end of the spectrum. I mean, it's like when I talk to fucking Boomer here, and he whips out all that lingo of shit that I don't even know what the hell it means. They're obviously certified in more things than who knows what, but you could go both ways. And for small shops like you and myself, I mean, being compliant and doing things right and being second or third tier, it works for us, at least for myself. And I'm sure you too.
Yeah, I think, and I'm sure you're the same way, where it's like, I'm doing the inspections and I'm making the parts. It's like, they're going to be right. Like we're not going to send bad stuff out. So, I mean, the 9001 is important for our customers just to make sure that their due diligence is done. But at the end of the day, you know, they're looking at everything we send, and we're not getting stuff back. So it's because we're making good parts.
Do they require you to do first articles on your parts if you got a new one that comes through?
Yeah, they do. Generally, they'll do it. you know, they'll accept our paperwork and stuff, but then they'll send it out to a third party to have it inspected at a lab or a calibration or a inspection company, or they'll do it internally. But generally, they won't take our word for it, but we'll do all that stuff, you know, to show our paper trail as well.
Yeah, it's the same with us and Parker too. I mean, they want you to do your five piece and then you don't do all the documentation on it and then send it to them. They'll do their own. Then you can compare notes. It's like,
yep.
Well, I think it's their way to make sure that you're checking shit correctly in the same way that they were. And luckily for me, when, you know, starting with them, I was only an hour and 45 minutes drive down there. If there's any discrepancies and say, what are you guys doing differently than I am? And how are you checking surface finishes and stuff like that? And, I mean, that was, I mean, shit, not to go off on tangent here, that was freaking 20 years ago. And there was old guys down there that would show me what they were doing. And I would do the same. But now it's so different. I mean, people, I don't want to jinx myself, but I haven't fucking had a part rejected in so long because I don't think any of the kids down there, even if they show up to go to work or even check and half the shit. So it's changed. It definitely has changed. I mean, the old timers were checking everything, and when the things got slow, then they were even checking chamfers on your freaking 10th or two holes. I'm sorry, you're out. What the fuck you mean I'm out? Like, out? Yeah, it's, anyway, that's all I had to say.
That's all I got to say.
You know, Jody, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, when people get slow, when people get bored, and they're like, well, we got to have to find something to do. We got to prove ourselves valid for sitting here. It's like, what? Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, yeah, that is bonkers. So Danny, you're with the industries, like what Tony was saying, you know, that, you know, being that sort of third tier, not getting to have to worry about all this other stuff, that also still though means that the, your destiny is a little bit dictated by this other company though, right? Like if they start to basically do not very well, then everything else sort of starts to fall over.
Yeah. We have a couple customers, just, you know, two or three that make up most of our work. And then all the rest kind of make up a little bit, you know, less than probably even 5%. But it's hard to do, especially with us, we're three people and one machinist and then two on the cleaning and inspection side. It's hard to be a big enough supplier if you would try to break everyone, all your customers into equal groups. You really wouldn't be big enough to make a difference to any of those customers then. So we know that risk. And a lot of the way we do our business kind of is with that in mind. So we are aware that one of our customers is probably 70% of our business, and, you know, we just know that going in, and if something changes, then we can pivot, but we're not in a position where if something changed radically there, but it wouldn't sink us in any way. We would just have to reconsider things and look forward.
Mm. So your business is attached to your house?
No. So our shop is at my parents' house. They have a farmhouse that was built in like 17 something, late 1700s. And it just happened to be on the edge of a town where my mom was born and grew up. And it's zoned industrial. And I was driving by it when I was in high school, and I showed it to my dad. I'm like, hey, this place is for sale, industrial, that's cool. Cause he was always into, you know, having a shop. For, we actually were in the foundry industry before we started our machining business. But so he had a foundry, and we moved it. He bought that place and we moved it there, and they fixed up the house. And so everything you see is actually my parents' house. And I live about 5 miles away, in the neighborhood that I grew up in. I came back and bought a house where I grew up, and my brother lives down the street, so everyone's close by.
So cool. Where's the pool at? Is that your house or
the pool's in my house? Yep.
Okay. And where do you do s'mores at?
S'mores are at my house generally. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
So let's get back.
Everything else is at my parents'.
Yeah. So your dad had his own foundry. That's cool.
Yep. Yep. So I went to Penn State, and I spent a lot of my time in the foundry lab there. So one of the professors that was focused on foundry work was was one that I spent a lot of time with. So I actually worked at a foundry out of college for a couple of years before my dad and I saw this opportunity to get into machining.
What did your dad do? I mean, have we already asked that question or not? I can't remember.
What did he do? He was, when he was, so when he was younger, like high school age, his dad had a foundry. Oh. And he worked with him doing that and kind of did that. But then eventually he got a regular job and worked his way up through various levels of supervision. And then when he retired from his job, he was working at a company where he supervised the Swiss department.
Oh, okay.
And so that's kind of where the Swiss thing came in. And then that place he retired from is always buying parts outside vendors, and they could always use more vendors. So we started up sort of with a foot in the door there to sell to them.
So where did you see your first Swiss at? I mean, with your dad or?
Yeah. So he bought one that they were getting rid of, when I was in high school, Citizen L16, and put that in our garage. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. Like I'd known about CNC stuff. And like, I was like, oh, like computers, like I was into computers. And I was like, I understood what it was, but I didn't understand like how you just start doing it. Cause it was just this machine sitting in our garage, and he's not super computer savvy. He knows the principles and the science behind it, but you know, he's not going to jump on the control, bang out G code.
Right.
So eventually I just kind of was screwing around with it enough, and I'd like call some of his buddies that knew like how to program them, and eventually figured it out and made these little parts on that machine. And that machine was pretty limited, but we hung on to it and then sort of didn't really do anything with it for a couple of years until we decided we were going to make it go. And then we bought the A20 and kind of got training and did it right at that point. And so that's kind of how we started the business. And then we got rid of that L16 because it was not really worthless.
I see.
Right on, man. That's a cool story.
Yeah.
And what kind of stuff did he do? What kind of stuff did the foundry make?
So we made primarily brass. It was all brass stuff, and it was parts for flintlock rifles. So reproduction, Revolutionary War, Civil War era stuff, where we had a customer that was basically a font of knowledge for that. And he would go around and find guns, pull the parts off, get patterns made, and then we'd make castings for him. And then he'd prep them kind of like to a medium stage, and then he'd just go around the either reenactments or wherever they're like SWAT meets or that kind of thing, where guys would be looking for those kind of parts, trigger guards, butt plates, that kind of stuff. So when I was involved with dad in that, it was just sort of a hobby. And then it was not profitable enough to make a go of it as a job for me. So we kind of spun that down at that time.
That's cool.
Still do any of that stuff?
No. I mean, it's it's fun to look back on it, but it's miserable work. It's, you know, gritty and hot.
Yep.
Stinky. And I mean, different gritty, hot and stinky from machining, but it's a little little bit more pleasurable.
Gritty, hot, stinky. Yeah. I remember being in a freshman. I might have said this story already once before, but in metal shop, we had a small foundry. And well, I think the sand wasn't really called sand. It was called Petrobon.
Yep. Oil sand.
The first thing that I learned from some of my great friends that I just made coming from Windsor to Hillsburg was you just grab a handful and throw it across the shop and yell, Petrobon! And it splattered whatever. Splattered. Like, wow, really? We could get away with this? And anyway, so we threw Petrobombs. And then I learned about, you know, making a cast and putting in risers and this, that, and the other. But I think I probably told Jody this story, but I slacked off and was supposed to fucking come through at the end of the year with a foundry project. And everybody was making abalone clickers, you know, so where you could check to see if an abalone was at the limit. Well, I didn't make mine. And so I busted somebody's Petrobon out and stole their fucking abalone clicker. And he, for some reason, this guy put like 13 risers on his, and I didn't stand him up correctly because when I was out there hitting on the wire wheel, the thing spun around and hit me in the nuts, and I crawled into the metal shed and fucking thought I was dying. And so then I eventually wasn't dying and crawled back out and turned it in. And the guy could walk up and identify that his was missing and that all of a sudden his was mine because he put 13 risers on his and I couldn't finish wire wheeling him off. And there was the 13 risers. And so not only did I get hit in the balls with the abalone clicker, I was guilty and I almost failed metal shop with a D minus. And now I'm a machine for life.
That's actually a great story, Tony.
It's you, true.
The guy that you stole the casting, like your thing from.
Yeah.
His
name was David.
Do you know what he's doing now?
I don't, but I could probably reach out and ask. Imagine. I know he used to ride a Husqvarna motocross bike.
Oh.
Yeah, I ran into him later. He had no hard feelings. He's like, I'm so sorry you got hit in the nuts when you were trying to steal my car.
I think he called it karma, baby.
I think he did. I mean, that's the first time I got whacked good right across both testicles with an abalone clicker. Trust me, it got all surface contact. Took me down.
It was clicking your abalones like no worries.
It clicked it. It said this thing's way above legal size.
Oh, whatever.
Cannot measure, cannot compute.
So, Dan E, your dad, he's still involved in the business now, though, right? You've basically turned him into a slave and kept him locked up in his own house running your lathes.
Well, he's up for it.
Well, that's good.
I mean, I give him that out every time we take a new job. I'm like, you cool with this? You going to be here? Yeah. Let's do it. All right.
It's great that you've got such a great relationship with your parents like that, you know, that it's because, you know, in situations like that, and I've seen it before where, you know, the stresses of running your own business anyway. And, you know, obviously Tony knows this, that, you know, that can take a toll, right? And if you've got, and you're in a family environment like that, and you're constantly, you know, got these pressures on you. I mean, the last thing you want to do is, you know, ruin your relationship with your father, you know, because of something like that, you know, or anybody. Yeah. So, I mean, what do you do to deal with that? How do you make it so that it's not do you just like have time out or you? Because I always thought the pool was just outside, and you went, fuck, I'm going to run the laves and go for a swim and have my schmores. And
it kind of makes it look like that, huh?
No, I think we do have a good relationship, and I think we will beat something kind of over the head until we have total agreement. Like we don't really... And we don't really hold grudges about anything. Like we'll kind of hash it out and have those uncomfortable conversations like early on before we let it fester. Everything's like equal, like we're 50-50 partners and everything. So, we're just kind of able to work it out. And I think a lot of the way we do business is that we're not putting ourselves in stressful situations. So we're not borrowing a bunch of money and then we have to make payments on stuff and that can kind of go sideways on you pretty quick.
Oh yeah.
So we were in that position early on, but as soon as we could get out of it, we got out of it, and now we're pretty conservative with what we do. Hence why we're wedged in a tiny shop and you know, just not overly glamorous.
No, I think it's you guys are doing it super strategically. I remember, what was it, maybe a year or two ago, you were out venturing off and saw another house, maybe a garage that could have accommodated all the shit you had going on. And you thought about it, but then you're like, nah, let's just leave well enough alone. Stay where we're at.
That shop was, I think, like 14,000 square feet. That was like a standalone industrial shop. It was just like a little bit, it was almost too good to be true. But then we went and toured it, and it would have needed so much cleanup just to like have it be half as good as what we already had, other than being huge size. But again, yeah, that was like, well, like you had to go all in, like all your chips in to do that one. And we're just like, eh, then we're going to be stressed, and we're not stressed now. So we're not going to do it.
Cool. I remember you asking me, I don't want to put you on a spot here, but I remember you asking me a ways back, your wife was already had a full-time job, and you hit me up and said, you can actually work with your wife all day and then go home. Is that possible? Is that for real? I mean, because you were thinking about doing it, and well, obviously you are. How's that going?
Yeah, it's going good. I didn't really have any doubts that it would go poorly, because you know, we get along sort of similar relationship as with my dad. Like, we'll talk stuff out, never fighting and screaming. Everyone's pretty level headed, so I didn't expect it to be a problem. I just more of a like, what do you talk about when you get home? If you've been together all day.
Well, that's exactly, you're exactly right. Because I mean, it's funny because she tells me, you need to shut that shit off when you come home. I'm like, okay, boss. And I come home and she's like, you know what I'm thinking? If we did this and we did that, we could do it faster. I'm like, oh, I thought we were shutting that shit off. And it's funny because I mean, we try to, but when you're, I mean, I think we're similar. It's the same. It's like when she's thinking about stuff and things that could go better or faster, or, you know, somebody's feelings got hurt and she wants to talk about it. And people ask me, how do you do it? And it's like, well, I don't think everybody could. And yeah, it's definitely different. And that's why when you were asking me questions, I just was honest with you. But it sounded like you guys could do it. And it sounds like you guys are doing it. So I was glad to hear that.
Yeah, the one thing we'll sit down to dinner and I'll be like kind of unwinding a little bit, and she'll be like, "Hey, are those parts going to ship tomorrow?" And I'm like, oh, "You got to be kidding me! I don't want to talk about when parts are shipping." But then she'll be like, "So and so, send a check in." I'll be like, "All right, let's talk some more business."
Yeah. Exactly. It's exactly right, man.
So the danger with your parts, though, Danny, is you could have like, you know, a whole month's worth of parts. And then you accidentally drop them down the drain and then they're gone.
Yeah, I almost did that this morning.
That would have been a great story.
There was a tub of parts on the machine, and like I let them build up a little bit, and I closed the door on the machine a little too quick, and they like tilted over, and my heart fluttered, and I'm like, oh, geez, that would have been bad. But didn't happen. They stayed put.
So is your wife younger than you, Dan?
No, she is almost a year older than me.
Oh, okay. So pretty similar.
Yeah, pretty close, though. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Is she okay with the smell of hangstrophers and the oil that flies around in the atmosphere?
She, I'm trying to think how she worded that. She doesn't like it. Doesn't like my laundry is always suspiciously separated from everyone else's. But she used to complain. I think she used to complain more about it. And then she started coming to the shop every day. And I don't like, she doesn't smell it per se anymore.
There you go.
So I think we've solved that problem.
So how, I mean, I asked you when you put them up, I want to get some feedback from you, and they've been up for a while. How is the scrubbers mounted from the ceiling doing with the environment in your shop?
That one's doing pretty good. My dad was asking me today to pull that filter out and see what it looked like, but, we didn't do that yet, but it's definitely helping.
You can see it, or always, you can smell it.
More of a feel, like it would feel kind of humid in there, and it doesn't feel that way anymore. And if the sun shines in, you can see mist coming off the machines. You can't really see it hanging like before. But we're gonna put another one in that room, so it'll have a little more work to do.
Nice. You know, it's definitely different working with family. And, you know, I think you guys might have saw my story yesterday when that truck rolled up and we had some more Swiss steel that showed up, four boxes that looked like two and a half, all skewed all over the fucking place. And it's like, so he rolled up. Well, first of all, he parked in the wrong spot. And I said, you can't park in front of that guy's shop because he's an irate old fucker. He'll come out and yell at you. So that's fine. But let me show you what I have. And when they say that, I'm like, well, one, this is supposed to come on a flatbed. And two, you're ashamed to roll up your door. And so he shows me and I see all these things out of the bottom. I said, oh, fuck. I said, well, I'm going to have to send you on your merry way because this is precision quarter inch fucking screw machine stock. And it's not going to go in my machine around 8,000 RPM. blah, blah, blah. And then, so I took a couple of photos and then I instantly sent it to the guy that bought it. And then I was talking to Katie and she's like, well, that's unfortunate because you had an order for 45,000 pieces and the next batch isn't due into the United States until September. And you know that because Danny, the guy, the crane operator that died over there at Swiss Steel, it's been backlogged certain sizes for a long time. And so luckily the truck driver didn't pull out yet. And I said, can I take a look? Because after looking at my picture, I was supposed to get two crates and you have two big crates and two busted up crates. So I'm wondering if there's anything that we can salvage here. He's like, yeah, you can look. I'm on the phone telling them that you're rejecting it anyway. And so we rolled up the door and we looked at it. And I said, fuck, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. I said, I think there's some shit here that's salvageable. And so we jumped in and we pulled out two boxes that were still intact. And then with all the loose stuff rolling around in his truck, we probably pulled out like maybe 15 bars that were bent in like 20 different angles. But, you know, so there's only three of us, me, my wife, and one of my helpers. And she's the one that said to me, he's like, you know, we really need this. And I go, I know we do. And so she jumps up in the fucking truck with no gloves or nothing. And she's pulling out fucking quarter inch bar stock. And I'm on the forklift. They're handing it to me. We rigged up this channel, the fucking slide shit on. And by the time it was all said and done, we were all black from head to toe because the stuff been rolling around his truck, and we put it down on the ground and I'm sorting through it today. And I would say about 80-85% of it is still good. But I told her last night, I said, you know, I really appreciate you jumping in that truck, no disregards, just pulling shit out, knowing that we need to get shit done because this is what's going to pay the bills versus just sitting there with the clipboard watching shit unfold or not unfold. I mean, that's kind of what family business is. So when you know you need to do it, you just buckle down and do it. It's a different environment. I didn't mean to go way off on a tangent, but as Jody knows, I always do. And anyway, that's, and shout out to the boss lady.
Yeah, that's cool. That's, and it's quick thinking, right? You need, sometimes you can be so clouded by what's in front of you that you need someone like the voice of reason to go, let's do this. And and I know, Tony, you know, you'd get just power wound up going, fuck, I can't believe these idiots have brought this shit again. You're like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, how can you do this? You know, this is unacceptable. And then voice of reason comes in and going, yeah, it's a shit situation, but sometimes you're still gonna make it work.
You're exactly right, man. And you know, after you pull it all out, you start looking at shit. You know, if you've got 80% of it still good stuff, then it was worth not just trying to find something to do until September.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Boomer, do you think you could work with Jackie? Do you think if you said, hey, I'm going to put a machine shop in my garage, and what do you reckon? She's up for it?
No, I don't think she's up for it. But, I mean, I don't think we would have a problem working together. I think it would be fine. I think it would be kind of the same dynamic that Tony and Katie have. Cause I mean, we spend a lot of time together with the boys and stuff, and that's stressful enough. And we come out just fine from that. And she's kind of level headed and reasonable about things. So I don't think it would be a problem, but I think, you know, with the kids being this young and how expensive it is to live out here, like, I just don't see us being able to do that sort of thing.
Fair enough. Yeah, absolutely. Fair enough.
Yeah, so the fact that you even say that you think you could pull it off, I think is impressive because I've talked to many guys that said, you know, how can you work with your wife and go home with her? There's no way I can only stand her for 6 hours at night. Like, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's a lot of guys like that. And it's, you know, I could see that being you and Jackie could probably pull something like that off.
Do you think though that like when people say that, do you think it's just them talking shit? Because surely you can't think like that. You know what I mean?
I think it's 50-50, Jody. I think some people say it just to be talking shit, and I think some people say it and they mean it. I mean, maybe they really can't stand their fucking old lady. I don't know. Go ahead.
I think there's a lot of people that just like being more independent and they like going and doing their own thing. And like, given the choice, I'd rather, you know, go do something with her than go do something by myself or, you know, with even, you know, friends that I have. Like, I'd much rather do something with her. And even because, like I said, with the boys, like, we never get time just to ourselves usually, except at night after they go to bed, and then we stay up way too late because that's, you know, all the alone time we have together. So
that's when you go to the bathroom.
Does that happen when you're at work, Tony, Danny?
What?
You know, hey, Katie, I think there's something wrong with the plumbing. Do you want to come and help me fix the plumbing?
I have no comment on that one.
I've got some special coolant you might want to have a look at.
You know what? I mean, you hear people talk about, hey, you know, I married my best friend, blah, 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 it's my soulmate, blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, people say that, and some people did. And this is my second go around, and I really do mean it. I mean, we both do mean it. And it's like, yeah, I mean, we would do anything for each other, and it shows. I mean, it really does. I mean, you probably see it in our faces and how we interact, but I mean, it does. So
yeah, it's beautiful.
I don't know. I can't speak for everybody, but I mean, I think that's what makes it easier to work the amount of hours and like she said, we do try to turn it off. But I tell you what, man, when you plop down in the hot tub and you're fucking drinking something, you get this fabulous idea. Man, we could run these things twice as fast if, and then shut up. You do need to turn it off. And it's hard. Anybody will tell you, any business owner will tell you that you need to turn it off. And meditation is great. If you could pull that off in the morning before you start your day, people could laugh at you and say, basically all meditation is just trying to clear your mind for fucking 20 minutes and let your body recoup. And if you can do that, things come to a head and seem simple. And I'm trying to get back to that spot in my life. It's been a while, but the short in and outs that I've had have proven successful. And when you give up on something and you try so hard and you're like, just let it go to the universe. And then before you know it, they're calling you and you're like, all right, I'll see what I can do. It's really weird how the world works in those ways.
Totally. You could do like, what's his name? Imago, the secret machine.
Yeah. Shop. Take a nap.
Take a 15 minute nap and just, you know.
Yes. I love that dude.
I've never, yeah, man, I was actually talking to him the other day about his automatic lawnmower.
That's badass, huh?
And it is badass. I was like, so what do you think? He's like, I don't know. I've only had it today. So ask me in a few months when, you know, and I was like, can you make it do like a different pattern? And what does it work? You know, like, you know, where does all the grass clippings go? Do they just stay on the grass? Like,
yeah, I was wondering that too. But most people say mowing your grass and leaving the clippings on the grass is best for it. If you're not going for that curb style appearance where you want it to be clean and tidy. I mean, mulch is best for everything, but better to ask would be make sure it doesn't run over one of our dogs.
Yeah.
Does it have a dog sensor? I don't know.
I don't know either. Or even a foot sensor.
True.
Child sensor?
Yeah. Kids are a dime a dozen.
Yeah. Like, you know, time saving things like that are great. And actually, good segue. So, Danny, your robot. I mean, you personally spend a lot of time configuring that to do like real specific things, right?
We have we have three of them, and two of them have only ever done like the one task we've set them up for. So we have one that loads parts in a fourth axis on the robo drill. And that one, I've moved it from the Haas to the robo drill and changed it a little bit, but it's only ever done that one job. But it does that every night. I'll set it up to run when I leave. It runs overnight then. And then we have the one that does the glass bead blasting upstairs. And that one just exchanges parts into the thing that does the blasting. So I haven't really, I mean, it takes some time to teach them, but in the scheme of things, probably less than 1% of the time that they're running. I mean, they do what they're supposed to now that they're set up.
I really liked how you kind of described it on one of the other podcasts, and you said, you know, like this is just some like very tedious, repetitive job. And I can't, I'm not going to pay someone to stand there and do it. And I'm sure as hell not going to do it. So there's only one solution to that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, that's,
and I,
that's
I think the- that could be said for a lot of shops. There's, you know, a lot of tasks like that. Like we have people that just stand in front of the parts washer all day, you know, washing parts, or they'll have, you know, 3,000 parts off the screw machine and they're loading them into the laser marker like 10 at a time, you know?
Yeah, it's
just stuff like that. It's something we've been looking into.
A lot of companies find it easy just to hire someone, get the job done and get it going. But when we kind of had the idea that, like, well, you know, with technology where it is and we want to just keep it simple, just family. And well, originally it was just me and my dad. But it's definitely a mind shift to think, well, how can I do this, you know, with a robot or something even simpler than a robot? Or does this need to be done at all? Or can we do it in the machine? Or, we spend a lot of time just thinking about like bouncing ideas off each other. That's, you know, dad has a lot more experience than I do seeing things. So he'll usually be like, oh, back in the 70s, we did this. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, that's a thought. And then I'll kind of take his idea and turn it into something with like a robot or whatever. And then, we'll kind of collaborate on something to get the job done. And we're kind of working on a couple jobs like that right now where, they're taking more of my time or his time because we haven't got the automation done yet, but we see it in our head and we're working on it. Luckily a lot of the products we do take like 2 years from like when the company asks us to make, like a couple hundred of them, that's when we'll start thinking about it. And then usually they'll come back 6 months later and need more. And then we're like, okay, this thing might go. And then we put a plan together of like, what do we need to get that job done? And do we need to automate it? And then we'll start thinking about it sort of from that first production order mindset where when we get into production, we're going to do it this way and we're going to have it kind of figured out. And there's always hiccups and roadblocks, but we spend a lot of time thinking about that stuff.
Have you ever thought about using it to throw cheese at children?
No.
Damn. Tony said I should do that with the big robots, but unless I have a wheel of cheese, we throw a wheel of cheese and then have maybe some kids lined up like Skittles and just see how many we can mow over. That could work. And then Shane could then send us the link to kids getting hurt and then we can have a look at them getting hurt.
Yeah.
Shane send you a link? I'm pretty much sure you fucking own that link. And speaking of fucking cheese wheels, I think I saw Tom the Machinist building this thing out of spectacular bronze that had pockets in it that spun shit around. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? It was some fancy Francois word for a wheel of cheese that just carried molten fucking melted cheese around and you dipped it. And anyway, he sent me pictures of it and I had no idea what it was. I think it was a little bit more fancier than fondue, but kind of along the same lines. But it was wild. That guy, he's something else, I tell you what.
But isn't, if it's hot cheese, isn't that just, it is just fondue, isn't it? But like, just he's made it way fancier than it should be.
Well, obviously he's French, so yeah, it's not fondue.
Loves baguettes and eats garlic.
Exactly. So, Danny, how many podcasts have you been on at this point in your life? I mean, I know you've been on some like 16 times in a row of the same podcast.
This is like a question that you, like, your wife might ask you, Danny, like, how many partners did you have before me? And, you know,
I think it was just three. But and one was twice. So two different podcasts, three episodes total.
Right. Cool.
That's not bad. You're not a hoe by any means.
No, not at all, actually. No, I'm not sure who would fall into that category, to be fair. The podcast hoe. Not
sure.
Here's
a little fun fact that you all know about Bitch Fist, right?
Mm.
And you know about Spikes.
Mm.
And you know about Lady Gaga on the Spikes.
Mm.
You know, aluminum 6061.
Mm.
Yep. It's 1-inch diameter.
Mm.
Well, somebody said, hey, TC, you want to do these? Because I ain't touching this shit.
Oh.
Are you okay? Are you having a seizure right now?
I don't know what I'm supposed to be saying.
Mr. Danny hooked me up way back in the day. He's all, oh, my machines are booked. This shit's not. Now, you got time for this? You want to even look at this? Blah, blah, blah. And we kept it on the down low for a long time. But no, he's the one that threw her dad's name my way. I don't even know how Jim found you, unless he knows you or you're just on the market there. He's from Pennsylvania also.
Yeah, I think that was the, yeah, I think he just showed up in my email one day. Maybe our website. I don't know.
Whoa. It
was wild.
So you could have been the one telling the story how you make product that then eventually ended up on Lady Gaga.
Yeah, I think it worked out for the best.
Everything leads back to Danny Rudolph.
All roads lead to Pennsylvania.
Can you imagine Danny sitting around the campfire with a fucking spike choker making s'mores? That'd be badass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like real tight
it
undies.
It could still happen. Whoa.
Come on, don't be.
No, like we're only going to do from the head up, you know, the choker and the s'mores.
Oh, I see.
Down to the undies.
But at least bare chest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, Danny asked me that, and I said, sure, I'll take a look at it. And then something turned into something, and I probably never made any money off that job, but it's all about being cool at this point, you know.
Well, man, you exude cool, to be fair.
Well, I just got a new quote today, and the fucking price of that same spike has tripled right now for 6061.
Shit, is that right?
Have I raised her price? No.
Hmm.
That's just what a sucker I am. So basically, we're losing money. Yeah.
To be fair, you're
doing it for the clout.
Yeah.
Boomer's right.
Yeah. And they like the kudos.
Yeah. I mean, because it is kind of cool.
Oh, but hey, let's be honest. I mean, you are like, you're basically the Tom Selleck of the machining world, you know? So I know you don't have the Ferrari parked outside yet, but it's going to happen, right?
You're gonna have that. Well, I mean, when you get tagged in all those pictures with all those chicks wearing all those freaking spikes and hardly any clothes, and then you can share it. I mean,
it's pretty cool.
I don't know. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but you are involved in it, so you can look at it as you made.
I'd say that's very cool.
Yeah,
you'd be proud of yourself, wouldn't you? When you get tagged into those photos.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at it as who's watching. I mean. First, like you're saying, Jody, straight out of the gate, this is fucking rad. But then you have to do the ripple effect. It's like, oh, my aunt in Indiana follows me on Facebook and I'm making these fucking spikes for this chick that has no clothes on and some guy's like got it poking out of the side of his face. Yeah, no, it's all good. It's weird.
Yeah, Tony whatever. Took a different direction in life, but hey,
he's living the dream. That's California boys. You gotta watch them.
California dreaming. That's what it is.
Oh man.
Hey, so look, I think Danny, thanks. You've basically introduced yourself to everybody and ongoing, you're gonna be part of the team now. So is there anything that you think our listeners need to know about you that might accidentally come up? So sort of preempt.
Or are there any questions, Danny, that you would like to ask the three of us?
Oh yeah, true. We should do that.
I mean, all of that right there.
Mm, all of the above.
I don't know. I feel like I know you guys listening to the past episodes, so I think we're pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So do you think you want to be a part of this mess, this hot mess, or what?
Yeah, this is fun. Yeah, I could do some more.
Good.
Right on.
Okay. Well, I think we will call it a night then for everybody. And
come on. Let's fucking have fucking Boomer wing it and stop the podcast. He's always fucking.
I can't. Think the kids are asleep. I can't be very loud.
Oh,
look, you can do a quiet stop podcast, bitch. You don't have to get irate. Yeah, be sexy. Be your sexy voice.
You don't have to do it because
he clears his throat. No, he's ready. He's ready.
But if we stop the podcast now, it's kind of pointless because it's at the end.
Well, fuck. I don't know how this works. You're the one that edits all this shit. Well, you used to edit it way back in the day.
Yeah, no, now I just basically just hit send. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Way it goes.
Well, then Boomer doesn't have his keyboard. He doesn't have his ukulele. He's not stopping the podcast. I mean, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah, true. No, right. But we should we do want to do that because Stop the Podcast was good. We should carry on. In actual fact,
especially when Boomer stopped it.
Hey, Tony, there's five questions. No, sorry, there's one question. I don't know how I got five, but there's definitely one. You would, anybody that's ever been on this podcast, you always ask the same fucking question to them. Go.
The same? Are you sure?
Pretty close.
Okay, Danny, are you circumcised?
Oh, that's one of five.
Well, we're about to find out.
Okay, come on, Danny. Rudolph. Come on, dog. Are you neck rolling or are you balding?
I don't know. I don't know what those two things are, but I can answer Tony's question in the affirmative.
Ah.
Well done. Well done.
Cool. Second right, question, Jody, Tony.
What's your question? So, Danny, if you get off the plane and you go into the bathroom at the airport, what urinal are you pissing in? Not the first one, I hope.
No, not the first one. Yeah, probably all the way on the other end.
Would you take your balls out?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends what you're wearing pants-wise.
What? What do you mean?
It depends like how much room you got to do that. Sometimes you don't have any...
Oh, you mean if you're wearing your skinny jeans, obviously you can't get all your junk out of the skinny jeans because they're pretty tight.
No, you pull them all the way to the floor. So everything's out. You could be that special. Tony, third question, go.
Danny, will you ever come back on this podcast again after all these questions?
Yeah, well, unless you're going to think up more weird questions.
Well, I mean, I know you've heard us time and time again, but I mean, we've never asked you straight to your face now that it's not just sound. Straight to your face. Who do you got? You got fucking Chuck Norris or you got John Wick after Chuck just ran over his dog?
More of a Chuck guy.
Yeah.
Chuck it is. Okay. All right. Mayor, any more questions?
Who do you follow on Instagram?
Oh, yes. That's a question.
Who would be your go-to accounts? Like not, you know, maybe. Yeah, whatever.
Well, I mean, to rephrase that question, I guess you don't have to actually ask who's your go-to. I guess the way that the whole world is worked out now, when you get up in the morning and you click on your Instagram, who's in your fucking top feed across the line, right, Jody?
Yeah.
You don't have to look. It's in our face.
Yeah. That whole algorithm.
I know you are in my face every day. There's Jody. And there's that view. And there's his photovoltaic fucking solar panels on his roof.
Yeah.
Photovoltaic. Did I say that right?
No.
No. I tried, man.
Go, Danny. Dan, sorry.
I don't know. I mean, just the regular machining guys. Adam the machinist.
He does some really, like, for somebody that just has the smaller shop, like his stuff is like Mackin, right? He makes some pretty fucking decent shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I envy his professionalism. Like I feel like I'm just making it up as I go every day. And I feel like he,
aren't
like,
we all?
I feel like he doesn't. I feel like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. I think he gets up and goes, I know exactly what I'm going to do now for the next 7.4 hours.
Yeah.
I want a pair of those scissors he made.
Yeah. He made those cool ones. Eh? Mm. Yeah. Okay. Dan. Yep.
What else? Let me look here.
Oh,
I don't know.
How unprofessional.
Do you follow Sonny the Machinist?
No, see, I like a lot of the guys you bring up, I kind of stopped like following new people, so I don't know exactly who you're talking about half the time.
That's He's good. Not new.
No.
But I followed like some guys early on, and I kind of stopped following people. So
Oh, like Titan? Like Titan?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I followed Titan.
Too bad.
So what's your favorite indexable carbide that you run in all those citizens?
Everything in my shop's pretty much NTK.
Nice. Okay. I've only used a couple of those with that new number that came along because the AE that came in and set that up he preferred that, and I had never touched it before, but it proved out to be pretty nice stuff.
Yeah, I think their holders are like, I don't know, they just make sense to me. Like sometimes you look at catalogs and you're like I need to modify that, or like that's not going to fit. It's going to stick out this thing and hit, and all their stuff is designed. It seems like it's designed for the machines I have. So,
well, exactly. Like, I mean, on the Nomura, that part off tool, I can actually change that insert from the backside while it's still on the machine, because it has a screw that I can hit from both sides.
Yep.
If you know what I'm saying. So I could take that insert out, blow it out there, put it in, never take that fucking tool out. I never did, which was pretty cool. I had not seen that before.
Yeah, I try to, you can't always do that, but I try to do that with a lot of my stuff. Leave it in the machine.
Yeah, cool. You'll have to requalify it.
Okay. Well, thank you, gents. That's been the Machinist Therapy Hotline. Big thanks for Tony Klauser.
Thank you. Good to see you. Glad to be here.
A very quiet thank you from Shane Poole.
You're welcome, baby.
And our newest person, Danny Rudolph.
Thanks for having me.
And me, Jody Tuckwell. You've been listening to Machinist Therapy Hotline. We're going to be back again in 2 weeks' time, because now we have a reason.
Boomer wasn't enough reason to come around here in 2 weeks. Come on.
Come on.
Okay. It's goodbye from us. Ciao.
Bye.
Later.
Yeah.
I think I've stopped recording. Did I stop recording?